So the spiritual theme of the month in January is beginning. And having Joan here today with Jared and Liam, little baby Liam here for the first time, reminds many of us of how much we adore babies. Many of us love to interact with babies or just witness how miraculous they are in the beginning of their lives. And with each and every child, we can say, this baby started with two cells coming together and multiplying again and again and again and again, and then eventually it became this new little person. It is truly miraculous every time. I don't think I'm alone, and I know from having gone through this sermon once, I'm not now alone, in being awed at how at different parts of their development, human babies can resemble other animals. So in the first days, newborn babies can resemble tadpoles with their little faces and eyes, and, you know, swaddled up, they kind of look like they're swimming around with no arms or legs to kick. When they get a little baby bigger, babies can resemble birds. They're like, wah, wah, and they open their mouth. Just going, you know, whatever is going to come in there, hopefully food, like little nestlings, inviting birds, mommy to deliver the hard-fought worm back to the nest. Babies get a little bigger, they can resemble monkeys. They just hold on to, you know, mom or dad, or it looks like they're in a tree, and then they can grab some food. And then as toddlers, they can resemble puppies, nipping at your heels, figuring out who they're going to follow around, just because, of course, it's very fun to follow somebody around. And then they get down on the floor and roll around, scratch their backs, or just crawl on top of each other, having a, you know, biting each other softly. When we are mindful, these spiritual observations of human babies can remind us how, as animals, we are all related brethren. This is a truth found both in science and religion. We all come from the same cells of life that were miraculously created 3.8 billion years ago. And those cells eventually moved from water onto land and over time evolved in many, many directions, including to create frogs, birds, dogs, monkeys, and humans. We're all part of this interconnected web of existence, which is magnificent. I have also learned from experience that comparing humans to other animals is uncomfortable and offensive to some folks, including some folks who take the Bible more literally. The book of Genesis says God made humans on the sixth day, and the story does not say God created apes on day five and then those apes evolved into humans on day six. No, the humans were created independently on day six, and that's important to some folks in certain faith traditions, and I respect that. Today we explore how Unitarian Universalists approach the relationship between science and religion. Last month, Ian Barber died. Mr. Barber was a professor of science and religion at Carleton College in Northfield, Minnesota. I have a lot of good memories there. Playing Frisbee, different story. It's an old girlfriend, it's a whole different story. 1955, Mr. Barber started teaching at Carleton, and in his work, he was a leader in both science and religion in trying to bridge the two fields, and especially back in his beginning of his career, it was radical. And he helped people categorize what is pretty evident to many. There are four prevailing views on the relationship between science and religion. One, they conflict. Two, they're separate and should be kept that way. Three, the complexity of science confirms divine guidance. And four, religion and science should be in constructive dialogue and engagement with one another. And throughout his 60-year career, Mr. Barber actively promoted number four, trying to promote the benefits of constructive dialogue and engagement between science and religion. As Unitarian Universalists, we are fortunate that we have a tradition which has embraced a strong, healthy relationship between science and religion for a long time. In 1550, the bright and brave Unitarian theologian Michael Servetus wrote the first correctly documented ideas on pulmonary circulation, as well as, for the time, other highly advanced ideas about human anatomy. Servetus also wrote Errors of the Trinity and publicly debated that rigorously to the point where Calvin had him burned at a stake. In 1774, Unitarian minister Joseph Priestley discovered oxygen. Not too long after, in 1796, Priestley directly supported the creation of the first Unitarian Church of Philadelphia on 22nd and Chestnut, which is one of the two first Unitarian churches in the country. The strong affinity between science and religion and Unitarian religious education was highlighted in 1925 with the Scopes trial, known as the Monkey Trial, which focused the intense national debate about whether public schools should teach biblical creationism and or scientific evolutionism. High school teacher John Scopes was on trial in Tennessee for teaching evolution, and his attorney, Clarence Darrow, represented Mr. Scopes. Mr. Darrow had strong connections with Unitarian churches and clergy, many of whom came out publicly to support their side in the trial. And we have to say, in this discussion, 1930, Unitarian astronomer Clyde Tombaugh discovered Pluto. And this is near and dear to my heart because I served a church near there. He was from the UU Church of Las Cruces, New Mexico, and that church has a gorgeous, large stained glass window depicting the small, brown, purple, icy globe of Pluto. And we also have to lament the fact that Pluto was officially declassified as a planet, and I do not feel that was a case of religious persecution. But it hurt. It hurt. And those poor Unitarians in Las Cruces. We are highly fortunate to have a religious tradition which explicitly praises the importance of the role of science in our lives. And I think it's also true that at times integrating science into religion can be a bit obtuse or seemingly irrelevant to the living of our lives. So, today I want to ask, how does the relationship between science and religion help us in living out our daily lives? What's going on right now in your life? And that's obviously a large question with multiple possible tributaries. I think there are endless ways science can impact us religiously. But so for today's purposes, I'm going to focus on the theme of the month, beginning. How does science help us understand the ideas and the living of beginnings? Well, first, science teaches us that beginnings happen all the time. So one, when was the beginning of the universe? Many people answer the Big Bang, and that happened 13.8 billion years ago. That theories around the Big Bang were developing about 100 years ago, and the Unitarian churches were out there on the religious edge supporting them. And to this day, I think this theory stretches our imagination about as much as any other one that we can get any kind of grasp on, this rapid explosion or expansion of matter and energy. But one question that I find mind-boggling, and I've been asking Carl Leiby this week, what happened, what existed before the Big Bang? So 13.8 billion years ago was the beginning of the universe as we know it, but what about before? And I've been getting help from different friends, and I have a limited understanding, but what I know or seem to know right now is that nobody knows with certainty what happened before the Big Bang. There are a lot of different theories. But so what I've been thinking a little bit more lately is, what if there never was a beginning to everything? In other words, maybe everything that exists, space, time, matter, everything that exists in the universe now has existed forever? Or did it just come out of nothing at some point? It seems like maybe there never was a beginning to everything. Or, conversely, you could say everything is always beginning. Or maybe it's both. Or maybe it's neither. And someone can explain. So here's where I go with it. The possible spiritual lesson we can draw from science in our is we have a human desire to know when beginnings and endings happen. It's natural. In many ways, that's helpful. However, we cannot always know. We can't always know. It's a natural tendency to think that our universe is relatively fixed. We know evolution is happening, but we tend to think existing matter and climate and animals and plants. But as Dr. Sagan's calendar frames the history of the universe, we can comprehend at least a little bit more. The reality is new events and entities are beginning all the time. We can mindfully appreciate this reality through science and religion, and this helps us to be more aware that new things are and can be happening in our lives all the time, in our lives all the time. Lao Tzu said, the journey of 1,000 miles begins with one step, but other people say a better translation is, the journey of 1,000 miles begins under your feet. The next thing you're doing is beginning right now as you connect with your breath. With this reality, we can mindfully apply this to our lives and places we're stuck, bad relationships, or lack of passion, lack of direction, or in good places where good thing, where you're on a roll. Here are some discussion questions from our small group ministry curriculum this month. Pay attention right now. This is the time. Pay attention. Number one, what new beginning would you like to see in your life? And what in the past has stopped you from making this new beginning? Or what in the present is stopping you from making a new beginning? And here's the one I think is possibly the most important question. What are some successful ways you have made new beginnings in the past? What are some successful ways you have made new beginnings? Appreciative inquiry. Be mindful of those wonderful new beginnings that have happened, because those stories probably carry the seeds for how new beginnings can happen right now. Here's a mind-boggling truth for me. The universe is expanding all the time. I think many of us imagine, I tend to, the Big Bang happened, all this stuff got sent out, and now, you know, the Earth is rotating around the sun at different measurements and rotations at the same time, and it's all pretty much set. It's somewhat true, but it's also true that the universe is expanding. And I don't really know, but it's still going in rapid expansion. And so what I think it teaches us in our lives, we can keep expanding as well. In areas such as spiritual wisdom or resiliency or kindness. You're not at your limit right now on kindness. You're not. You keep expanding. You keep beginning now. We could certainly keep learning. So that's the second part I want to highlight, how we can apply lesson from science to our everyday learning. We can always learn more and begin again with new understandings. The world is not flat, it's round. When Pythagoras and Aristotle pointed this out, began changing people's sense of possibilities. One human race or ethnic group is not smarter or ethically better than another. Religions and science used to say that it was true. Mostly they said European peoples were smarter or better. It was a lie, or it was and false. Or both. Religion and science have both proven no. Got billions of people, and you have a lot of smart people, and a lot of ethical people, a lot of different factors. People are people. One family. If we're open, we can be available to step into new ways of seeing and understanding the world. New paradigms can help us to begin new ways of relating to each other and Mother Earth. amateur astronomer John Lowry Dobson died this week at the age of 98. One major factor in his happy longevity was stargazing. His life passion and dedication was being an astronomer, an amateur astronomer, and mapping the stars and appreciating. But his bigger deal was encouraging as many people as he could touch to stargaze themselves. And he invented a low-budget telescope that made the purpose of which was to make the cosmos more available to as many people as possible. He was a part of a movement called Sidewalk Astrology. Astronomy. And he said, set up a telescope wherever you are, including on a city sidewalk, and just look up. And it's amazing. I think if all of us would get a chance to look up in a telescope, you should probably take that chance and do it. And while you're looking up, try to wrap your head around this. We are in our solar system with our sun. We have eight planets rotating around it. And our galaxy is the Milky Way, which has billions of stars. The most current estimate guess is that in the universe, there are 100 to 200 billion galaxies, each of which has hundreds of billions of stars. Look out and contemplate that. Or if you're just using your naked eye and looking at the sky tonight, maybe you can see Mars or the moon. You can contemplate that there are very high odds that conditions needed for life do exist on millions of other planets. Life probably does exist elsewhere, and maybe life is beginning somewhere else right now. No matter what, right here, right now, we know for sure that we can learn new things, we can feel wonder, and that life is beginning again and again and again. And science and religion can certainly agree upon that. Blessings be. Amen. And now we will sing a hymn 28. Number 28. Please stand as you are able, body and spirit.